Welcome, friends, new and regular listeners. This is Red Ice Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and it is our pleasure to have you with us today. We are coming to you from Sweden up in Scandinavia, but you can, of course, reach us worldwide through our website, redicecreations.com. We do radio, webcasts, and films on all things interesting and important. And, of course, don't forget to follow along in our very busy news section as well. Okay, I hope you're doing well and that you're comfy wherever you are around this globe. If you've heard a few of our recent shows, you know that we've been talking about Antarctica, underground bases, the hollow earth, different aliens, and the subterranean species. Well, one thing that we haven't gone into in great detail yet is about what is known as Operation High Jump and the story of Admiral Byrd and his expedition to Antarctica, his secret diary, and about his expedition back in 1947. We have Aaron Kaplan with us on the line today to begin to talk with us about these subjects. He's written a book called Deep Analysis, Frightening Conclusion, and there's quite a few more interesting areas that we'll go into later in the program as well that will kind of tie quite a few subjects together that has to do with basically the end of time, the fallen angels or the Nephilim. We're going to talk a little bit about the alien agenda, DNA, genetics, the development of the nuclear bomb, and pretty much where we're heading at this point. Aaron's website is simply Deep Analysis, frighteningconclusion.com. There you can read more about the book, about the author, and see excerpts from the book as well. So with that, welcome to Red Ice Radio, Aaron. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for having me on your show.
It's great to have you here, Aaron. And just as a way of introduction, just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, before we go into your deep analysis and the frightening conclusion.
My background is approximately 30 years in aerospace engineering. I work for many aerospace companies, civilian project and military, Dayton fighter, the F-15, Grumman Aerospace, Fairchild Republic, Pratt & Whitney jet engine manufacturing, Sikorsky helicopters. I got a few patents down with them, and some submarine warfare experience, underwater mine detection and so forth. Sports, I do some flying, some car racing, and so forth, but usually high-scale aerospace engineering excitement.
Interesting. And so is that where your kind of interest in the story of Admiral Byrd and the South Pole expeditions, did that in any way tie together with your background in regards to military and U-boats and so forth?
When I was in the military engineering field, you hear many rumors from people that you deal with, ex-general, ex-officers, you hear rumors. And I became very, very interested. And I'm listening to radio program just like yours for many years, read many books, and I'm trying to tie things together. And for many years, nothing. I read book A, book B, they all tell you, we're going to give you the answer, we have the answer. But you read the books, and you get a feeling that nothing has really been answered. They give you vague things. And so somehow they leave it up to you to figure out the real answer. So what I did, I sat down a few nights, many months, a few years, and one night it just came to me. And believe it or not, High Jump is only one point, but it's a key point. It ties in the old Nephilim to Roswell. It's one continuous loop. It's phenomenal. It's fantastic.
So why don't we talk a little bit about Operation High Jump, Admiral Byrd, and so forth, and you can give us a little bit about on the background story for people who never heard about it. But I guess one misconception, I guess, is that it is that people know or believe that Byrd was in Antarctica around 1946. But as far as I'm concerned, he went there already in 1929 and actually did a flyover with a Ford trimotor plane, I think, back then. Have you heard about this as well, Aaron?
I sure did, and you hit the nail on the nose. Here's the problem. It seems that the U.S. government, U.S. armed forces, and some world governments are trying their darnest, they're trying their best to make believe the Operation High Jump never happened. And I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Once they admit all the occurrences of Operation High Jump came to fact, came to be, then they cannot refuse the Roswell incident. It's amazing. They said in Roswell, no UFO, it's a weather balloon.
Yeah.
But once they admit to Operation High Jump, it's checkmate time.
How is this? Tell us about the connection between Roswell and Operation High Jump then.
Okay. If you go on the internet, I'll give you one example of many, where the government is trying to make believe the Operation High Jump never happened. One article. Listen to this. Why did the United States government in late 47, only months after the famous Roswell incident, send the Naval Task Force to Antarctica? Now, we all know that Operation High Jump happened before Roswell. High Jump happened late 46, early 47, and Roswell happened on July 3rd of 47. So Operation High Jump is way before Roswell. Now, that's what they're trying to do. Make believe it never happened, and I'll tell you how it ties them together. Operation High Jump was supposed to be original, a very peaceful expedition. So they say. Now, peaceful expedition did not exist with 40 to 50 warships and aircraft carriers. They were armed to the teeth. And by the way, nobody knows, but I did find out that this task also carried in secret 3 nuclear weapons, but they were never used in Operation High Jump, but it did carry them. Now, this operation somehow encountered in the late stages some very fantastic flying machines, UFOs. I will discuss that in a second. Now, if the U.S. government admits that the Navy actually encountered UFOs in January 47, December 46, January 47, February 47, if they admit to that fact, then they will have to admit to the fact that it's also true that in June 24th of 47, Kenneth Arnold did see 9 UFOs, and then in Roswell, some UFOs also crashed. It's a chain reaction. Once you admit to one, you have to admit to the other ones. But if you can keep one hidden that never existed, then you can get away with saying, there was no UFO in Roswell, it's only balloon. Funny, huh?
And so how are they connected? You're saying that they went down to Antarctica first, Operation High Jump happened first, and then the Roswell incident. What is the relationship between them then?
The relation between them is this. It seemed there is the aliens, the famous, called the Nephilim. They've been in prison here for roughly 55,000 years. A certain bunch of them. Roughly the start at 200. There were more. They came from the planet Nibiru, the Anunnakis. They were explained in many books, especially written by Zakaria Sitkin. It's fantastic. Now, those aliens went through many catastrophes. They lost equipment and so forth. Apparently, they found a hiding place somewhere in the inner Earth. Supposedly now, there are 2 openings. Allegedly, in North Pole and the South Pole. It's not proven scientifically, but as we go along, I'll prove that there are. Once the Navy task went to Antarctica, supposedly, its true mission to find some Nazis, so forth, they never imagined that right next to so-called Nazis were opening to giant places of the Earth that allowed those aliens to come out, the flying machines. Now, the deal is this. Those aliens supposedly signed a treaty in World War II, or before World War II, in 1936 in the Black Forest of Germany, between them and the Nazis. Now, supposedly, they also signed a treaty with the Americans, President Roosevelt, 4 years later, in 1940. Now, those 4 years, I believe, gave the Germans a slight, gigantic head start in weapons developing ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason why the Germans were always ahead of us in weaputry. You notice, in World War II, they always had better weapons than us, very advanced. That's a four-year jump. Because they signed the treaty first between the aliens and them, then we signed it 4 years later in 1940. That's four very important years. Now here comes our fleet in late 46, early 47 to Antarctica to find some Nazis. The rumors of the Nazis came about around 1942 in Europe. Suddenly, many concentration camp inmates have been missing, and also young German and Slavic. I'm saying pure Germans, at the age of 19, 20, 25, 30, engineers, scientists, they've gone missing suddenly. Where have they gone? Nobody can figure it out at a time. At the same time, it was also known that Nazi Germany started to build gigantic new submarines. They can cruise the world underwater for many, many months. There are many devices. One of them is called the water snorkel. The device that converts water, salt water, air process to oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, those people, the young Germans and the prison inmates, wind up in Antarctica. Now, settling down there, apparently, those aliens have an agenda. They have an agenda. They're using the Axis side and the Allied side, both, in parallel, for two parallel programs heading toward one. The final program is, may sound silly to some people, but it's a fact. Time is coming near, is December 21st, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
We'll explain later why. Let's hold this date. Nobody will stop their agenda. They are in full control of our presidents, of our armed forces, and so forth. The problem why they're getting away with it, they control everything by pulling strings. They give the orders to organizations so-called like the Illuminati, Trilateral Commission, Bilderbergs, and so forth. And those entities give the orders to our governments. It goes down to the armed forces and civilians.
Is this because of the treaty that was signed between the Nephilim or whatever and the different governments?
Yes. The treaty was done legally. Just imagine if you ever saw those vampire movies, and the vampire comes to the window, knocks on the window, says, "Let me in." Once you open the window, let him in, that's the end. Now, we also know the vampire can come in anyway. But once you let him in by signing a treaty, he has full control over you, legally. He shows you a piece of paper. Here it is. You signed it. So that's how they operate. And that's been going on for thousands of years. But unfortunately, this time around, this December 21st, 2012, many things will occur at the same time. In the past, I was only the passing of one planet, Nibiru, came around, caused some havoc. But this time around, many things are culminating in the universe that may cause real problems, major. They themselves are concerned. Even though they're not human, they are supposedly four-dimensional entities. They cannot die by any, normal method.
Mm-hmm.
But they are concerned because if something happens to this planet, one way or the other, they may not find a way to go. Where to go? The reason is they're imprisoned here by their own kind.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember that the planet Nibiru, as citizens on it, called the Anunnaki. The Nephilim are also the Anunnaki, but they are the fallen ones. They don't want to fell here by choice or by force. They are kept here by the other Anunnakis, which are the superiors. Like a prison planet. They cannot escape. I will explain later why. That's a different subject. They have to find a way to escape of this planet. They haven't found it yet. So they have done all those years try to super speed raise us to a point where our mentality is sophisticated enough to reach a certain technical stage to assist them in rebuilding their technology, fuel for the spaceships, new spaceships, and so forth. They cannot do without us. They have lost too much of the hardware, roughly 13,500 years ago in the last flood, which is known as Noah's flood. Many things happened then. Now, so here we go, Operation High Jump. The whole Navy is heading toward Antarctica. The whole Navy. Many admirals have approved this operation. However, you have to remember that most admirals originally had no idea of any treaty between aliens, you know, and any armed forces. But President Truman did know. He knew from Roosevelt. He knew. So at one stage before they tried to assemble Operation High Jump, President Truman actually tried to stop them when he found out that this operation is fully armed to the teeth. But it didn't help him. So he took a back seat. But you have to remember, if he knew of the operation, so did the aliens. They knew that Operation High Jump was coming. They knew. But of course, they didn't fear it.
What was the reason for the U.S. military to go down there? Was it to, one speculation here, as you briefly mentioned, is that the U.S. tried to go after the Nazis and what they the expeditions that they did down there about New Schwabenland. They were trying to go down there and to root them out. Or is there another reason for why the U.S. went down there, down to Antarctica, that is?
The original reason publicly was a peaceful scientific expedition. However, the real reason within the generals is to fight the Nazis. But it had to be done in secret. And I'll tell you why. Once you admit to the world that the Nazis conquered Antarctica, now becomes World War III. That means that you have publicly to root them out, get them out, and fight them to the death. But if you can fight the Nazis in secret, disrupt them, and force them to escape Antarctica, you can do it quietly without a major war.
All right, yeah.
But what they didn't expect when they went down there is suddenly to encounter a fierce fighting UFO fleet. Now, this UFO fleet was broken in two halves. That's the funny part, in two halves. One half of the UFOs apparently was built and manned or controlled by Nazi Germans with the help of the aliens, the Anunnaki. And the other half was flown strictly by the aliens. But the difference was visually. I don't know if you're familiar, but at the end of World War II, many tanks have been seen in the battlefield. You know, most tanks had a single cannon, whether it was 75 millimeter or 105 or whatever. The Germans used the famous 88 millimeter cannon. On most of the tanks and the turrets. Toward the end of the war, many tanks were seen with double, what looked like double-barrel aircraft cannon which was 60 millimeters. However, they were not cannons. They looked like cannons. They were not. Those double-barreled were given to them by the aliens as supposedly, I'm not going to say a ray weapon, sounds too far-fetched, a super hydrosonic weapon that destroys anything with a certain range, very quietly, no noise.
Mm-hmm.
Many of our tanks were hit by that weapon, and what it did, it went in like a 4 or 5 in size, it came out the other side as a foot wide hole, and anything within the tank was totally destroyed. So the secret weapon that the aliens helped the Nazis to build to the end of the war. Now, they must have known that the war is coming to an end and the Germans were going to lose. They knew that. However, you have to remember one thing. Those aliens signed a treaty with the Germans, with Hitler. They promised them, no matter what happens, we'll guarantee you safety. We'll help you escape no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So the end game plan was, no matter how the war goes, both casualties, the reason why I'm saying casualties, is you have to remember President Bush's famous saying, order out of chaos. You can hide many things during a war. Many, many things. So apparently, this World War II was necessary for the aliens to hide many things.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
Including rebuilding their fleet, UFO fleet, somehow work toward arranging a fuel supply for the UFOs, which, by the way, they extract from exploding nuclear bombs. You ever see those science fiction movies where we drop a nuclear bomb in some aliens on the ground and we think it's going to kill them?
Hmm.
Well, those aliens work in reverse. Apparently, they welcome nuclear explosions. They must have a process where they extract matter from the energy of the bomb. We'll discuss this later.
Yeah, exactly. We need to go into that, but go ahead with your story.
Okay, now, so here we go toward Antarctica to extract Nazis. Now, we arrived there the last week of 1946, and we were there for a full month of February. We expected to be there for 8 months. That fleet was fully equipped with fighters, armaments, you name it.
Yeah.
To fight an 8 month war. Within 3 weeks, we turn our tails, put a tail between our legs, and escape with our lives.
Hmm.
But one more thing happened there before I get into the fighting. A very famous person called Admiral Byrd, very famous. Like you mentioned earlier, he had many fights in the North Pole and the South Pole in the 20s, the 30s, and early 40s.
Yeah.
He was used almost as a spy. Many times he was sponsored by the U.S. government, but many times he was also sponsored by the Rockefeller Foundations, New York Times, and so forth. Admiral Byrd noticed that every time he collected records about the North Pole and Antarctica and gave it to the Rockefeller Foundation, he never got them back. But they gathered all his records and kept them. He understood right away when he was young, even in mid-20s, he already understood. He must have heard of the word Illuminati and Freemasonry. That time, he already tied 2 and 2 together. So he already knew who he was working for. But in one way, he kept his mouth shut and kept doing what he did because he was very patriotic American for his country. So Admiral Byrd's mission was He had a different mission. He was not in charge of combat in the Operation High Jump. He was in charge of six aircraft. Basically, they're called R-40s, or as we know them, as the DC-3s.
Mm-hmm.
The R-40s are converted DC-3s. They all have dual engines, radial engines, 14-cylinder each, about 1,000 horsepower each. They cruise around 250 miles an hour cruising speed, top speed around 300. They took off from an aircraft carrier called Philippine Sea. There were six planes, six RD-4s tied with change to the back of the carrier. And before the carrier could see action in Operation High Jump, those six planes had to take off first to clear the deck.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So Admiral Byrd was the first plane to take off from the carrier. Now, they already installed the snow skis, the ice skis, on the plane, on the carrier. They were on. They only had about 3-inch clearance from the skis to the deck of the carrier. They also armed each plane with jet bottles, like miniature rockets, to assist in takeoff. So those planes took off from the Philippine Sea carrier January 29th, 1947. Took the fleet 3 months to arrive to the area. There were three groups, the Eastern Group, the Western Group, and the Central Group.
Mm-hmm.
They came from California, and they came from the East Coast of the U.S. with Panama Canal. As soon as Admiral Byrd took off from the carrier, it was the first plane. Five other ones took off after him. As soon as those planes took off, he had to fly roughly 700 miles to base camp, called Little America 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was built for him. He was there earlier. Some years earlier, he rebuilt Little America 1, 2, and 3. The new base, Little America 4, was only a few miles from Little America 3, but that's irrelevant.
Sure.
As soon as those planes left the carrier turned around to do battle with the so-called, supposedly, Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to understand this. If you check the internet, all the books, they all give you dates. Like ship A went to port so-and-so on the so-and-so date. Ship B arrived here. Ship C arrived here. Suddenly, there's an area of 2.5 weeks in the calendar, in the books, where there's no data of any ship movement.
Mm-hmm.
None.
Mm-hmm.
I name it the black hole for a reason. That's where the war started and ended, where there was no data. Now, Admiral Byrd wrote in some secret notes with 4,000 witnesses. There were at least 4,000 fighting men and women on those ships.
Yes.
Mostly Americans. Some Russians, some Australians, some English, but no French and no Polish. I wonder why. Now, there are over 4,000 witnesses to what they've seen. 4,000 plus witnesses.
Exactly. Where are all those kind of accounts of this?
They were sworn to secrecy or else. You have to understand that after Operation High Jump has concluded, you had mass suicides over the next few years of many admirals.
Hmm.
Mass suicides of at least 4 or 5 admirals that were involved in Operation High Jump. Even Secretary of Defense James Forrestal committed suicide. First, he was hospitalized for insanity. Even Admiral Byrd, a few years later, was hospitalized for insanity.
Hmm.
It's like I said, it's an operation the U.S. government and U.S. Armed Forces Navy are keeping under the rug. It never happened.
Yeah. So
now,
go ahead.
As soon as the fleet goes down to Antarctica to start military action, it was very peaceful. They've seen UFOs. They've seen them go above the fleet. But there was no firing, no action. They flew from one side to another. Nothing happened. They were saying, hi, guys. We'll see you. But as soon as the Navy started the military action, all hell broke loose. Those UFOs, like I explained earlier, were seen, the Nazi UFOs, were seen on the bottom with the same double-barrel cannons that I explained earlier the German tanks had, the secret weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Those UFOs fired at our Navy with devastating damage, very destructive. They sunk quite a few ships, and many were disabled, totally. And right among them, there were other UFOs flown by the actual aliens who did not fire a shot. They just flew by. Some of them went straight through the horizon. Some alien UFO dove right in the water, right in front of the ships and disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So we have two types of UFOs. One, they were firing firstly with secret weapons against our fleet. The other one, they just observed.
Yeah.
Now, as soon as our fleet stopped firing, UFOs stopped firing. That happened 2 or 3 times. So here's my conclusion. Those aliens promised the German Nazis they'll protect them in a defensive mode, but they will not go on the offense. They will not do so.
Mm.
They will not do that.
So why is that? Maybe you just can describe a little bit about the different relationship. Are the Nazis working with one group here of the aliens, and another group is there to oversee that nothing goes out of hand? Or what is the kind of relationship here, so to speak, between these different two factions of the aliens that you're talking about and the Nazis and the Allies?
Okay. Apparently, those aliens are working toward an endgame, which is to escape in 2012, one way or another. They need those Germans down there for a reason, which I'll get to later on. They brought the Germans down to Antarctica, supposedly, I believe right now, under false pretenses. They brought them down there telling them they'll find them safe haven, and rebuild Germany in the future with a new Reich, new Deutschland, whatever.
Mm.
The Germans believe that, and they went for that. They thought the Germans made a great effort to bring all the weaponry, the new submarine, the new jets they built to Antarctica with people. Now, what they don't know, those Nazi Germans don't know, is the aliens at the end may have a different purpose for them.
Yeah.
But I'll keep that for later on.
Okay.
So the Germans believe, they actually believe, that they have a chance to rebuild Germany here in Antarctica, a new Deutschland.
Mm.
So they are going under the presumption that so the aliens are the friends, they're really helping them. But the aliens have a different agenda. Apparently, they used the Axis, the Germans, and us before World War II to create an atomic bomb.
Mm-hmm.
The Germans would make certain parts in their beautiful factories. We make other parts. So you have to realize one thing. Those aliens have their own agenda, but they're using us.
So does this imply then that they themselves cannot develop certain technology and they needed a war as a way for us to advance technologically, but during this time, so to speak, they're using us and using our innovative force to gain certain technologies. Is that what you're saying?
Almost. What I'm trying to say, those aliens have roughly, I would say, 45 million years ahead of us in knowledge and technology.
Right, right.
We cannot teach them anything.
So we
can't teach them anything.
So the question becomes,
but
why?
What happened is...
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me explain. Imagine a soldier, very well trained, with a machine gun and a rifle in his hand and a tank and a plane, is ready for war. But what happens if the machine gun doesn't have any bullets or fuel for the plane and so forth? What does he do?
It doesn't work.
He's useless.
Yeah.
He's useless. You can have an Indian jumping out of the woods, shooting a bow and arrow, and he's dead. That's exactly what happened to these aliens 13,500 years ago when supposedly they settled in a place called Atlantis. Supposedly.
Right.
I'll call Atlantis. So the deluge came. Something else happened then, which I'll get into later on. Our Earth tilted a few degrees. Giant storms came. Floods. You name it.
Gotcha.
It destroyed the laboratories. Totally. You have to remember, those aliens are DNA experts. Their whole past is to terraform planets, just like our Earth. I believe they terraformed the whole galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Our galaxy.
Right.
Over the last 20, 30 million years. They actually terraformed it. Maybe not the same exact individual aliens, but the ones that came from the planet Nibiru, the Anunnakis. They came in groups. And the Bible even talks about it. The cherubim, the ophanim, and the seraphim.
Mm-hmm.
That's the three groups that the Bible gives them. They formed this earth. A few of the Old Testament or the New Testament. I mean, I release myself making a statement. So when I refer to the Bible, I refer to it only as a history book.
Sure.
I don't get any religion.
Sure.
I'm trying to stay out of Christians or the Jews, which I have to be, but I'm trying not to get involved in religion. Strictly scientific purposes. And in Genesis, you know, you read, you know, the first day they formed the earth, then the trees, the water, the animals, the bugs, then came human being. This is the exact steps that it takes to terraform a planet. Exactly.
Hmm.
And those Nephilim are DNA experts. DNA to them is a game. It's like to us to mix a cup of coffee. They do it, this is their gig.
Sure.
But they got in trouble. When they first came to Earth, you read in many stories, whether it's the Bible or books, they fell in love with the earthly woman. They had to shed their skins in order to mate to the woman of the earth.
How do you mean shed their skins, literally, or are you talking about in terms of DNA or genetics here?
Yeah, I'm going to explain that. Shed the skin does not mean like a take off your skin like a Halloween. Since they are DNA experts, they found a way to change their whole physiology to mate with our woman.
To make it compatible, so to speak.
That's correct. Now, to say one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
Besides being DNA experts, be very careful. Those beings are super, super shapeshifters. Okay? They can shapeshift on a dime. Almost instantaneously. This is in their nature.
Right.
That's how they are. It's like you can watch on our ground, lizards go around, change from red to blue to green, brown. They can change your physiology to anything they want to be on a split seconds.
Hmm.
There are many stories from our side, the American side, and the Russian side, in those secret laboratories where they are working side and side with those aliens. And one professor, one doctor, stands next to another, you know, to to an alien being who's 6-7 foot tall, looks normal, and he turns around looking for a pen. He turns around to the desk behind him, grab a pen, turn around, and the man is gone. Instead of him, you see a crocodile standing in front of you, or giant lizards.
Mm-hmm.
What happens? You fall on the floor and get a heart attack.
Now, do you think that that is a technology, or is that in their physiology, meaning that they just have the ability to turn off and on certain DNA strands within themselves, meaning that that is a form of shape-shifting because they can control their own DNA, or is it technology that they're using?
It's their own body physiology, except for one thing, they made a mistake. When I explained before that they shed their skins to be compatible with the women of Earth,
mm-hmm.
they actually changed part of their DNA. The reason why they're in trouble now is since they've lost the big laboratories in the last flood 13,500 years ago, they lost the capability to go back in time and salvage the process to bring themselves back to the original origin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what they're doing now, since Operation High Jump, if you notice the news, in the newspaper, the newsreel, human abduction by aliens, they call them alien abduction, but actually it's human abduction by aliens.
Mm-hmm.
They've increased tremendously since Roswell.
Yeah.
They are trying to find, like Noah, God called him a righteous man. Well, the reason why I called Noah a righteous man, not because he was religious or righteous or honest, is I believe because of his pure DNA.
Sure. Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah.
They tried with Noah to hide from the big gods, from Enki and Enlil, who try to destroy us. Apparently the brother of Enki, I think his name is Ea, one of the gods, that's the story according to Sitkin. He's pretty sharp, the guy, he's pretty good. Tried to help, apparently, the 200 imprisoned aliens, Nephilim, on the ground, by allowing one person with pure DNA like Noah to salvage him, allowing them in the future to use them to reconstitute themselves
mm-hmm.
to original shape. But unfortunately, things didn't work out too well for them neither. So right now they have a deadline of astronomical happening in 2012. They have to beat the deadline. Those aliens are now going furiously to find the correct DNA in order for them to reverse themselves and to escape this planet.
Hmm.
The reason why, their superiors, about 55,000 years ago, allegedly, installed a barrier, which I call in my book the Gamma G barrier.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an invisible barrier. The moon is approximately 250,000 miles away from Earth. So that barrier is roughly also the same height all the way around the Earth, like an invisible screen, invisible ball.
Yeah.
Roughly 250,000 miles away. Now that barrier is strictly built to detect DNA. Remember, those entities are DNA experts. It's like us. We have blood type A, B, C, type O, like A positive, B positive. We also have DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And if we commit a crime, they cannot trace us by DNA, chart. So apparently this barrier is built strictly to hone in on those 200 Nephilim, their individual DNA type. If they try to escape this planet, they cannot. This barrier will sense it, and will destroy it on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And those aliens know it. And by the way, that's what happened in Roswell.
So what you're saying here is that it's not we who are the prisoners, so to speak, on this planet. It actually is this rogue group, so to speak, of you mentioned 200 or so Nephilim, and they're trying to get out of here before 21st of December 2012. And maybe you can touch a little bit more upon why that is. Has it to do with astronomical alignments that you mentioned, or is there anything else? Or are the other branch of this species coming to this planet to kind of sort things out, or why are they trying to get away before this date?
There are 5-6 occurrences which are astronomical. One is not. One is very far-fetched, but a movie was made about that, and I'll explain. First, they're afraid of the approaching planet Nibiru, their own planet. Now, remember, they came from this planet. They know exactly when the planet is coming. They know exactly. And so did the god in South America, a very famous South American god. Cut through whatever his name was, with Q.
You're talking about Quetzalcoatl?
That's right. I'm sorry.
Roger, yeah, got it.
He knows. He said, I will be back at the end of our calendar, which is December 21st, 2012. Now, it's been proven that the Mayan calendar is super, super accurate so far. So far. Super accurate. And he said, I shall return on that date. Now, the second thing that's happening is we supposedly, every 26,000 years or so, are entering a thing called black axiom or black matter in space. It's like being sandblasted by black metallic carbon or dust. This supposedly happened every 26,500 years, supposedly. Certain layers have been found in Europe that that proved that 26,500 years ago, roughly, we found some very heavy black carbon layers between the soil. Our sun, the last couple of years, I understand by reading some books, has lost almost 300% of its magnetism. Black spots on the sun have almost disappeared. Totally.
Yes.
Now, just imagine, the sun emits gamma rays constantly. They travel millions and billions of miles in space. One of the things that's holding them back is some kind of magnetism. If the sun loses magnetism, automatically those gamma rays, those invisible flames, will go deeper in space. They'll be hotter. Apparently, next couple of years, we expect some real firestorms to come from the sun because of that.
Indeed, yeah.
Some experts say it's 4 to 5 years, but nobody's really sure.
Sure.
But those aliens are also terrified of that.
So
planetary alignments.
So there will be a
go ahead. I'm sorry.
A different. There will be a different. How should we put it? A different. Environment on this planet after that point because of solar well, basically solar flares, CMEs and so forth, and they're trying to get away from that for reasons of survival. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, that's good. I believe it's starting already. I mean, you see the mysterious fires in Greece, the olive trees burning out of nowhere, California.
Oh, California, I know about, but I haven't heard about Greece yet, no.
Oh, yeah. Last year, there were many forest fires in Greece, and olive trees are burning like crazy. Apparently, the drying on the inside, it's like being a microwave from the inside. They're drying up, and you put a match to them, they'll just catch a fire.
Right.
Like dry wood. So maybe it's already starting, but we're not sure. Now, planetary alignments of our galaxy. Roughly around December 21st, 2012, other planets in our galaxy, including the Milky Way, are supposed to align and align.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, can you imagine a steel ball on a metal plate or a steel ball on a plastic plate and having a magnet put next to it about an inch away, then another magnet and another magnet? Slowly, the ball is going to start to roll toward the magnet because it will become more powerful.
Yeah.
Our Earth may, I repeat, may do the same thing. And if that starts, that's total chaos. So they know what's coming. They know what's coming. They have to escape this planet. They know that. Even though they're not human beings, they're from the fourth dimension. Like if you remember what God told Noah before the flood, that all those in the flesh will perish. It's true, the human race has perished. Most of them have perished. But they survived because they're not of the flesh. Very simple. Now there's one more thing that they're afraid of. It may sound far-fetched, but you have to listen to it. Do you remember the movie that was made with Star Trek a few years ago called The Voyage Home?
I think I saw that one. I can't remember exactly which one of these it was, but I've seen most of them. So go ahead, tell us about it.
The whales involved. Whales.
Oh yeah, that's right. I remember that. Yes.
Okay. It seems a spaceship came to Earth from far, far away, emitting a very strange sound. They figured out the sound was a duplicate of the humpback whale. It's trying to locate a whale. Apparently, those alien races, if they knew that those whales survived, everything here is peaceful. They couldn't locate one, and the space vehicle threatened to destroy the Earth.
Yeah, that's right.
So what did the Star Trek crew did? They had to go back. Now, this happened in the 23rd century. They had to go back to the 20th century, find two humpback whales in an aquarium, put them on a Star Trek ship, bring it back to the 23rd century to emit the correct sound so the spaceship can pick up the sound of the living whales and live in peace.
Sure.
Now, there's a very distinct possibility, and I don't laugh, but you have to hear to my theory, okay?
Sure, go ahead.
We were created here by the same race, the Anunnaki. By Enlil and Enki. We were created. Now remember, don't think religiously. That's wrong. Do not think what I'm going to say next. Do not think religiously. At the time of our creation, there was no religion. There were no Christians, no Jews, no Muslims, no Buddhas, and so forth. However, it seems to be the God, capital G or little g, has kept an eye on a certain group of people. Okay. When Moses went up to Mount Sinai the first time, the burning bush, God told him, I knew your forefathers. I knew Abraham, Jacob, and Isaac. So apparently that God is watching a certain group of people. Why? I would say biologically, DNA. Not religiously. There were no Jews yet. Isaac was the first Jew, supposedly, because he was circumcised. Supposedly. But I'm not speaking about religion. I'm just speaking DNA.
Gotcha.
I believe that God is watching a certain group of people very carefully for the reason I just told you, their DNA.
Yeah.
Now, what if that group of people, God gave me a name. He didn't say Israelites. He didn't say Jews. He called them a Hebrew name called Am Segula. The word Am Segula in the Bible, Hebrew, means a certain type of a chosen people. I can't even explain what Segula means. A certain, very special group, but not religious. I would say again, it's DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Unique, a very unique group of people. Now, what if that group of people happened to be his pet, God's pet projects? Okay?
Yeah.
He wants them around. He created them. Now, what happened in the next few thousand years, that group of people was abused by his 200 Nephilim in wars, extermination, whatever.
Mm.
What if those 200 Nephilim here know that in 2012, their superiors will be arriving on the planet Nibiru? That's allegedly. Mm. I know it sounds far-fetched, but you have to listen to this. You have to pay attention. It's a very distinct possibility. What if Enki and Enlil return and go, where are all the people that would, you know, that are supposed to be here? Where are they? Can you imagine what the wrath would be on those who are in Nephilim if Enki and Enlil or any god find out that so many have been abused or missing?
Right.
That's one reason why I believe, now, again, it's a possibility, that right after World War II, very quickly and urgently, in super speed, very fast, they've created the State of Israel. I know it sounds far-fetched. I know that. The State of Israel was created real quick. Not only that, they had to find a group of people in a certain concentrated area to guard a very important item. A very important item. And I'm going to tell you what it is. It's called the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
Because I believe that the Ark of the Covenant is a duplicate. And the rod is a duplicate of an old ancient weapon. An old ancient weapon called the Spear of Destiny and the Tablet of Destinies.
And Aaron, we need to begin here to round things up with the first hour. So why don't we do like this, then we continue hearing out your story here, talk a little bit more about the Ark of the Covenant and the Spear of Destiny, and tie it into the weaponry that you're mentioning here. And obviously, we have much to discuss to kind of sort some things out here. But to round things off here, Aaron, for the first hour, tell us about your website again, and for people who are interested in getting a copy of your book, how they would go about doing that.
Well, sure, my website to purchase the book is http://deepanalysis.frightingconclusion. That's one word, deepanalysis.frightingconclusion.com. Or you can just email to Libris, my publisher, www.libris, that's xlibris.com. Or if you don't have a computer, just dial by telephone. It's 888-795-4274 to order my book.
Okay, very good. We will have the phone number up, and of course the links as well, so you can go there from our website easily and check that out. We are going to continue hearing more from Aaron and his perspective in hour two. He's going to tie the loose ends together for us on his theories and conclusions. So if you want to hear more, join us in our member section, where we have much more radio available for you on a wide variety of topics. Also check out our webcasts and films that we have up there for you. All information about how to sign up is available on redicecreations.com. And don't forget to sign up for our newsletter as well. It's been relaunched. Check the front page. Sign up for that, and we'll deliver the latest news and additions from the website right to you. We have some important programs coming up with MEP Marta Andreasen on the very important Lisbon Treaty. Andrew Basiago is going to talk with us about life on Mars. Kevin P. Miller about Generation RX. And Lloyd Pye on the Starchild Skull. Do stay tuned. But more coming up now with Aaron Kaplan after this break.
Increase the pain. I wanna steal your hands off. danger.